Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
So we're very lucky to have Steve Mackett here with us, who's from an organisation called Wenta, which is an advisory body on startup businesses and so on. He'll tell us more about that in a minute. So Steve, thanks for coming.
Pleasure.
We could do what we do with everybody here, so a quick run through of what your career's been to date, how you've ended up where you are today in the exalted position that you're in
exactly
now, and then maybe you can tell us a bit more about Wenta.
About the organisation. Yeah, happy to do that. Well, how I got to where I am today is a complete mystery to me, really, because I'm one of these people who, when I left school, went to university, did a business studies degree, had no idea really where I might end up. And I sympathise because now I've got a son who's 22 in exactly the same position. A daughter, different story, very clear, very focused on one particular direction. But it is difficult when you're young, I know, to have that aspiration. And I was just talking to Stephen earlier on in that only in the last 3 years have I actually run my own business and owned my own business. And I've realised that that's what I like doing best. And I wish really I'd done it much earlier on. And I know that a number of young people have that aspiration to run their own business, but particularly in the UK, the numbers who actually go on to do it are very low. We can perhaps chat about why that might be. So when I left university, I went to work in a marketing position. I specialised in marketing in my last year of my degree for a German kitchen company who had specialist outlets in the UK. So I worked for them, helping them promote that. And I then went into a range of other sales and marketing jobs, predominantly in the building and construction industry. I then eventually had some more formalised sales training to build on my sort of marketing expertise. And then in 1995, I saw a job advertisement in the Daily Telegraph, so a big national paper, obviously, and it was advertising for business advisors to work for an organisation called Business Link. And I've been married to the same person for 31 years, you know, so I know my wife extremely well. Even back in 1995, we've been married for a long time. So I took this job advert home and I said to her, Judith, I'm going to apply for this job. And being the supportive person that she is, she said, Steve, you've got no chance. Don't waste your time. It's in a national paper. There are thousands of applicants. But my application must have struck a chord because they accepted me and I joined Business Link as an advisor, talking to small to medium-sized enterprises. I did that for 2.5 years, and it still remains the best job I've ever had in my life. It was a fantastic job. I saw probably in excess of 700 businesses in 2.5 years, and just the experience of going talking to those business owners is fabulous. They're all doing different things, exciting things, fearful things. It was a great job. Following on from that, I then went and joined an organisation called Exemplus, who ran some of the Business Link programmes. I went back into the Business Link network until that closed in 2011. And then I joined an ex-colleague in a small business consultancy based in Cambridgeshire. I'm still a director of that business. And my work at Wenta, where I'm in a part-time role, is through that consultancy. So it's a contract. I now work with Wenta. We've got just under 50 people. And our business is to encourage people of all ages, all backgrounds, to start up and run successful small businesses. So whether that's to give them the initial advice and support that they need to take that first step, or once they're running the business, to move it on to the next level, that's what we're about. We help individuals gain the skills to work in those businesses as well, as we do for the business owners.
Okay. Wenta, just first of all, is that a national?
No, it's not. We're based in Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire and North London. We have a number of business centres, which are, if you're aware of Regis, the big sort of national business centre people, we're like a tiny, tiny version of that. So if you want to come and rent one of our offices, it's on a very, what's called easy in, easy out basis. Only 1 month notice to get out, so it's not a huge commitment. So it's very useful if you're starting your business up. You can have an office as big as this. We can have an office just for one or two people. So it's very, very flexible.
Yeah.
And we also have what we call an incubation unit in each of our 5 offices, which would be a room about this size with a bank of desks with about 12 computers. And that's even easier to access. The first usage is free. And then we charge a very nominal amount, for a very low amount, for people to use those facilities. 12 computers. But because people come in to use those facilities at different times of day and night, we can probably have about 40 people at any one time using those facilities over a month.
Everybody's got a computer at home.
Or, yep, they have.
You know, they've got a laptop or at least. Why would they want to use, you know, those facilities?
It's a very good question. And some people do very happily stay running their own small business from home. But if you've done it, a lot of people do find it's quite a lonely experience, and they enjoy the interaction with others almost more than the fact that they get a telephone and perhaps a mail answering service.
Oh, I see. They get
a whole experience of working with colleagues. Yeah. And there's an awful lot of networking that goes on, and cross trading. So we'll have people sitting on that side of the desk buying marketing services from me, and I'm buying tourism services from you potentially as well. So that works very well. And our model then is to try and encourage those, as they grow and become more successful, to take a larger unit in one of our other buildings. We use the rental income to fund the other activities that we do, because we don't make any profit on the other activities at all.
And it is just a stress, it's a not-for-profit.
It's a not-for-profit business, that's right. The directors don't take any, or the shareholders don't take any income out of the business.
Right.
You're Luton.
Your music.
Radio Lab, 97.1 FM.
What would be, say, three common problems, the biggest and most common problems that a startup business has in its first year or two of life?
I suspect that those problems revolve around a similar set of issues, whatever your business. First and foremost, people tend to start a business because they like doing something or they're very good at doing something. So, for example, the traditional example is a hairdresser, isn't it? Somebody who decides to become a self-employed hairdresser. They're good at hairdressing. That doesn't mean that they're very, very good at cash management or marketing or a whole other range of things that you have to be successful. So I think that's number one. People start a business for going into it because they enjoy doing it and they want to do it, but they lack the other skills.
Right.
Secondly, and leading on from that, the biggest issue for all businesses is cash. And I think understanding cash flow, how that there's a delay between when you buy your products and services that you have to have for the business and when you get paid by your customers, creates an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thirdly, I suppose that there's the traditional issue of what you want to do with the business. You know, people aren't necessarily sure about whether it's going to be a growth business or just a lifestyle business to generate an income. And having that clarity is probably a useful step as well.
Okay, so for somebody here or whatever, thinking about in the next year or two starting that business, what would you be recommending in your consulting role, whatever, in terms of getting clear in their minds, even writing down on paper, before they take that leap? What do they need to get really clear in there?
They do need to get the basics clear, and that does come down to some kind of business plan. You know, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to get to? And what things do you need to put in place in order to take that journey? Do you need income to keep you going for a period of time? Do you need cash at the front end to start the business? If you can answer those kind of questions, I'd recommend they start as soon as possible. You know, just plunge in and try and get something started, potentially while they're here at university. Well, they've got the environment of colleagues like yourselves to support them, as well as external support.
Yeah.
We were just chatting over lunch, and I don't know the exact statistics recently, but there are pretty horrendous numbers, pretty bad numbers of young people who actually go on and start a business. When they come into university, as I understand it, something like 30-35% have thought about starting a business, but those who do is down in the sort of 10-15% over their entire career. So something happens that makes them decide no, self-employment. And I guess there's also a big practical element of, for some students, the debt that they come out with at the end of a university career. A steady, in inverted commas, job that they could do and get an income every month is perhaps more attractive rather than the risk of starting up something and incurring even more debt.
What reasons do you think that less students end up going into starting up their own business compared to those wanting to do it maybe a few years previously?
I think it may be that fear of the risk, you know, the risk. But I think even more, it's perhaps just not having the confidence and support to try it, to go ahead and try it. You know, I described when I worked for Business Link, talking to all of those businesses, I did see an awful lot of businesses, and I'm not an expert at any business really, but I found the most valuable thing that I could take to those people who ran their business was to give them the confidence to tell them they were doing a good job. Because when you run, even when you've started your own business, there's very few people who you can talk to get that feedback. Who do you talk to? You might talk to your partner, but you know that's very close, isn't it? It's quite difficult sometimes to talk to a family member. You could go and talk to your friendly bank manager. Different point of view, that exactly. So it's quite a lonely place to be as running your own business. So to have somebody to talk to. And again, in this environment, because I know quite a bit about the University of Bedfordshire, it's a very supportive environment. There's lots of support that you can get here. So that confidence building, I think, could turn those numbers around.
Sure. This is Radio Lab.
Your Luton, your music.
And one of the things that we measure in our business, in an active year, we help up to 1,000 people start a new business. It's quite big numbers. And the statistics show that if you do take some kind of support and help, you're far more likely to have a business that will survive. And the survival rates are something like, after 3 years, if you've had support, high 80%. If you haven't had any support, mid 60%. So there's a 20% difference between individuals who take some advice and support. And if you just cover your ears for a moment while I say, female entrepreneurs are much better at taking advice. Much better. I don't know why that might be, but they are. The other thing I was going to mention, from January, we've been doing some work with a regional organisation who are government-funded, South East Midlands Local Enterprise Partnership. And from January, we'll be working with them to help individuals, whether students or anybody in Bedfordshire, Milton Keynes and parts of Buckinghamshire, start up their own business. And as part of that, there will be an online portal available as well, which isn't available across the whole county at the moment, but it will be. So again, any student can access that. And that has some a live chat facility, so you can talk online to an advisor about your business plan. That one, which I'd recommend you to have a look at, is www.myventures, all one word, myventures.com.
Right, and then the Wenter?
The Wenter one is similar, www.wenter.org.uk. And another anecdote, again, picking up on your comment about the flooring company, I have a very good friend who I play tennis with him, so he's just a friend. He runs a flooring company up in Cambridgeshire. I come from Cambridgeshire, and they turn over about £40 million a year. They're quite a big flooring company. And he started life as a carpet fitter. That's what he did. He just fitted carpets. And then at one point, his sales director decided to set up his own business. And he was a Steve as well. So he said to Steve, will you and your colleague come with me? And they went and they started this separate business. That was about 25 years ago. But I was chatting to him just last year, and he was saying now, he said, I could go and fit carpets still, I know how to do it, but I'm not a floor fitter anymore, I'm a business manager, I'm a business owner. And for him, the fact that he runs a flooring company is almost irrelevant now, because he applies the same good business practice to that company as if it was any other business at all. And they've got a couple of spin-out companies that have no connection to flooring at all, because they've learnt those skills that I mentioned previously that you can then apply to your business. So he can diversify. Yeah. I sometimes think, with all the problems, he'd still quite like to get on the tools, as they say, and back on carpet fitting, but he can't.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, so obviously, because you've seen and are seeing so many people, what are the key sort of characteristics you say that a budding entrepreneur or just somebody starting a business, whether it's a hairdresser,
yeah,
or somebody who's very keen to get stuck into carpets, or whatever it might be, innovative idea. What are the sort of key characteristics, personality traits, if you like, make them more likely to succeed, would you say? And what are the characteristics that might not make them succeed?
I'd sum it up as one main characteristic, and that's being completely focused on one idea. Whether that idea is particularly good or bad, I think successful entrepreneurs are totally focused on their idea. They don't for a second believe it could fail. They are so committed to the idea, they'll just get on and do it. the most successful ones. Yeah. As I said, many, it's a lifestyle choice, but for the most successful, they are just determined to make their idea work. Yeah. And I think sometimes we, as people who are involved in public sector support, forget that idea. They forget why they're in business, and it is to make a success. We used to get very hung up on, you know, why people might be in business. To be honest, they're in business to make money, aren't they? You know, that they want to make money. They're not there for, you know, something to do or pass the time. If they were, they could think of lots of easier ways to do it. So single-minded focus. And again, I'll give you another example. I had a colleague, I went to school with this chap who's a year older than me. He failed his A-levels, so he had to come back a year, and that's how I got to know him. We both finished our A-levels at the same time. And he then went to work for a hydraulic a company who made hydraulic couplings, so pipes for hydraulic equipment, a company called Rexroth, based in Cambridgeshire. And he suddenly had this idea because one of his relatives had been on holiday to Central Africa, and he came back, his friend, and said, you know what? He said, there's a real market over there because they can't get spare parts in these remote parts of Africa. So this chap, Alan, decided he'd go to Africa and start up a business making and selling hydraulic couplings. And that's what he's still doing. He's still doing that 30 years later. But who on earth would think about that? But he just became totally focused. There's got to be a market. Central Africa, and I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And he did. Take an opportunity.
Yeah, finding a little niche.
Bit of a niche, that's right. And then following through.
Yeah.
Following through.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Again, going back to those survival rates, the reason that the survival rates are high is because we don't encourage people to go forward if they're not suited to it. People may come out of a large organisation with some cash as a redundancy payment, for example. The last thing we should be doing is encouraging them to put that money into a startup if it's going to fail. It's much better for us to be honest with them and say, let's try and help you get some skills to redeploy, go for another job, a different kind of thing, rather than starting up your own business. Some people aren't suited to it.
Okay, so how do you make that assessment? Assess that?
It's a difficult thing to do unless you're talking to them face to face. Face to face, our advisors can usually tell pretty quickly whether people will be a success.
But okay, I'm going to push you then.
Yeah.
So what do your advisors pick up on in that?
Okay, well, I can give you another direct example,
yeah.
Which I've used in talks and presentations that I've done with a diagram. I go to the same chap to have my hair cut every 2 weeks, and I have done for the last it's very nice. And I have done since I was 18, 5 years, no, not only 5 years ago, since I was 18. He's a year younger than me, so he's been cutting my hair since whenever. He is my biggest failure as a business advisor because he never takes my business advice, ever. And I knew that fairly early on. So quite quickly you realise this chap is not going to take advice. He doesn't have that mindset. And I think if you're not willing to take advice, it's very difficult to be. You can still be successful. Some of the best entrepreneurs are those who, you know, I'm sure Richard Branson never took a word of advice in his life. He just did, and he had that single-mindedness. But generally, if you take advice, you've got a better chance. So Hendrik, my barber, no. Never going to succeed as a businessman.
Radio Lab, 97.1 FM.
Unfortunately, currently, at the moment, there are not a lot of sources of finance other than the ones you probably imagine. So bank loans, family, friends. There are some start-up loans, but there aren't a whole range of things that you can access in order to start up.
Is crowdfunding starting off much in
Crowdfunding is crowdfunding is becoming increasingly popular in the media, and it's being talked about more and more. There are lots of opportunities for businesses starting who are actually crowdfunders. They actually are started. That's becoming very popular. It's a little bit like business angel funding, if you're familiar with business angels. So that's the idea of going to a wealthy individual who has an interest in tourism or flooring and saying, would you like to invest in my business? And if they've got an interest, they will invest and take some
equity. Shares.
Crowdfunding is similar to that in that the percentages for success are quite low. So it's quite difficult to get crowdfunding for something other than some high-tech startups. It's not the solution to everything.
And presumably an established business that wants to expand.
Exactly. And there's also an issue around it, which I was talking to somebody about recently, around the due diligence, if you're familiar with that, for around crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is quite nebulous. You know, it's not like going to the bank, giving them your business plan, receiving a sum of money, and then paying it back at a regular opportunity at a rate of interest. Crowdfunding's a bit like, you know, you'll have some benefit if this works. There's not a lot of checks and balances in crowdfunding currently. I think there may be a little bit of an issue building up there.
There's going to be some scandals.
I think there will.
Because it's not as
regulated. That's the word, isn't it? It's not as regulated. But
so, innovation. So it's a bright new idea. So taking this pen and taking it to a whole new level. This pen that I've got in my hand, where it does require some funds. You haven't got an established business because it's new. It doesn't exist. You haven't got any sales at the moment. You've only got an idea in your head, if you like. How many of those sorts of ideas come to you, and what's your sort of standard advice in terms of moving those ideas forward?
There are some pockets or some particular areas of funding activity, depending on what you want to do. And again, we were chatting earlier on about some European funded projects, which can help people have access to university facilities, for example, for developing new products or developing marketing strategies around new market entry. So it does really depend upon what you're trying to do. So if there is something around technological advances, there are some government schemes to help you, for example, look at patenting, some support to patent your idea, to take it to market more securely. But it will depend very much on what you do. Again, going back to the sort of funding schemes that might have been available to those businesses that I was talking to a few years ago. Of all the businesses that I talked to, many of them would come to us asking about finance. Unfortunately, in all of those businesses, apart from the standard sort of banks or a couple of other schemes, I only found one funding scheme that actually went through successfully, and that was a company based in Letchworth, just down the road from where you live, Stephen, who manufacture dental implants, and they did find some European funding to help them develop new products in that field, right, working with a Swiss university. There are some, but they're quite obscure and quite difficult to find.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we do as well. We'll very honestly tell businesses and individuals about whether there is a scheme, a program that they can access or not.
So it's not sort of bright picture for somebody wanting to start up a business at the moment. I'm not blaming you entirely on this.
Well, thank you. Yes, that's good.
So is it as gloomy as I'm taking it, or is it if you like more difficult? Or I guess it is for something where you're trying to be innovative with a smart new idea that no one's come up with before, as opposed to opening up another flooring business or another hairdresser's or whatever it is.
I think that's a good way of putting it. It's more challenging. It's not impossible. There are routes to trying to access finance, help, support, but it would be wrong to say that it's easy. It's definitely more challenging, but there are opportunities. And we've had, again, if we go back to the statistics, if we see 100 people in a three-month period, for example, probably only two or three of them will be looking for funding to grow a really successful business. The rest will be working at the lifestyle end of life, if you like, right, lifestyle businesses to fund their, you know, their day-to-day spending. So only two or three. So it's not big numbers. Right. And we can usually find some way to help those individual ones. One of the interesting ones we've helped over in our offices in Stevenage over the last year, a young man, and he's invented for sports practice a wall which deadens the impact of kicking a football against it or hitting a tennis ball against it, so you don't get a big rebound. Because obviously if you're playing against a wall, you get a long rebound. He's got this wall developed out of this composite plastic where it puts the ball back to you at a consistent speed. And he's gone through to a second stage of funding, and it looks as if that will be very successful. He's got some potential customers lined up, but that's taken him 2.5 years to get to this stage. He hasn't made any profit yet. He's just got to the point where he does now have a product. So not just a prototype, he's got a product.
So how did he fund himself?
He funded that through a European programme that we helped him find, actually. Yeah.
So he got some grant.
He got some grant funding. Yeah. Right. It wasn't sufficient. He had some other funding of his own as well.
Right.
But and he came through the incubator, you know, sitting at a desk.
Okay.
At 6 o'clock in the evening for every night for 3 months.
Yeah.
So can I ask you the because it's interesting if you're thinking of setting up your own business and it's what the banks would regard as enormously cash generative, so things like coffee shops or pizza places where you know through historical trading analysis they generate a lot of cash very, very quickly.
Yes.
And actually their cash flow issues are minimal almost, versus let's say something like, you know, who invented the wall. How do you advise or how do you steer people who, when you've got a business model or an idea which is so far removed from anything they've seen before, and it is truly innovative, how do you advise or service people in terms of trying to find that funding versus those business models where, if we want to start a pizza shop today in Lund, we'd probably get funding for it.
Probably.
You know, very easy. But if we wanted to make the wall thing, we probably wouldn't. So
yeah.
how do you advise them? You say it's taken 2.5 years. You know, to your earlier point, you've got to be quite determined to.
Yes.
You've got to align yourself with some quite specific resources and support around all of that.
You have. It's really why we come to events like this and work with the university sector. You know, we have a wide network of organisations and individuals, so that if we do get that example that is completely new to us as well, we may be able to think of somebody that we can refer them to for the specialist advice. Because yes, it is tricky if you have something that's if you're trying to create a market which doesn't exist at the moment. For example, the wall, there's no real market for that. It does take a lot of specialist support. It is difficult. And you're right, in some areas it is easier to get funding because the return is going to be greater.
Yeah.
So,
Or more predictable.
Yeah. One of the models that you'll be aware of that some of the larger businesses take are franchise models, because they de-risk, that there's less risk in a franchise model. So, for example, tomorrow if you or I wanted to start up a McDonald's franchise and you saw an advertisement somewhere, we could do that. We could go to the bank and raise the money. The last time I looked at it, the funding you need is 400,000, and it's a 9-month programme that you have to go through first before you start. So you need to fund yourself for 9 months plus £400,000. If you've got a good business case, some banks will lend that because it's a pretty good bet that they're going to get a return on it. So,
Well, it's not innovative.
It's not innovative.
That's one of the key differences, isn't it?
Yes.
I was going to ask you, There's so many businesses. You must have a few in your head, the sort of personal favourites that you've been involved in that were dealt with where you didn't really think it was going to succeed. It's sort of slightly come from left field or whatever, but actually have succeeded.
Yes, I've got a couple of those as well, which are my failures really, because I haven't spotted the potential. So again, I've got another ex-school friend who lives down in Bagshot in Surrey. He lives in a beautiful place because he lives in the grounds of Bagshot Hall, which is now Sophie and whichever one of the Royal Sophies married to. They live down there as well. He lives in a little small holding, a small house. And he farms a bit of land. And pretty quickly he realised that was never going to make enough money to, you know, fund three children, which he has got. So I went down to see him one day and he said, "Steve, I've got this great new product that I've spotted that I'm going to buy into." And it was a franchise. What it was these pieces of equipment, play equipment, that spray water. Okay, so it might be a seesaw with a spout in the middle, and as the children go up and down, it throws water at them. Or it goes round and round and water sprays out. And I said to Greg, this chap, I said, "Greg, that I've never heard such a stupid idea in my life. That's ridiculous." But he went and bought it, this franchise, I don't know how much it cost him, from Denmark, and he's made an absolute pack it out. He sells it to local authorities on the south coast, and they put them on the promenade next to the sea. So good, bad, or weather, whatever it's like, children can go down there and just play. If they can't get on the beach, they can play. And it's been a huge success. So that was my second one, which I did almost spot. We were exhibiting at the Bedfordshire show. If you know, every 2 years there's a huge show in Bedford down by the riverbank, and there's a sort of business element to it as well. And we were there on both days. I was there one day just helping people and giving advice. And a man came onto the stand, and he was about 2 inches taller than me. He had practically no hair at all. You couldn't see much of his skin because it was covered in tattoos. And he had the biggest dog with him I've ever seen in my life. So two of my colleagues said, why don't you go and talk to him, Steve? You're going to have a chat to that chap about his business idea. OK, I'm going to have a chat to him because I like dogs. So I went to have a chat to this guy and I said, what can we do for you? He said, I've got a business idea. I said, OK, what's that? He said, I'm a window cleaner. I said, oh, are you a window cleaner? He said, but I'm not an ordinary window cleaner, he said, because I want to have a whole patch covering the entire area of Bedford window cleaning. He said, because window cleaners, they come, he's absolutely right, they come and go, they clean your windows for a couple of weeks, then they go off and do something else. And he did become extremely successful. He's now got about, I think last got about 8 people working for him on his behalf. And that I almost let slip, but we did give him some advice, realised this guy, again, single-minded, knows his market, because he'd actually done some market research about areas where there was not a window cleaner at the moment. And he was setting up where there was a gap in the market rather than going in and competing. And he's doing very well for himself.
I was going to say, do you think his size and his dog had any influence?
Might have had some people paying him.
Deterring competition.
Might have done. But again, that would have been an easy one.
I suspect it might have done.
But it would have been an easy one to overlook because, again, window cleaners are usually classified in that sort of lifestyle area of business, aren't they? But he'll be a very successful man, I'm sure.
Okay. And what about ones that you're particularly proud of where you have advised?
Two really that spring to mind. Again, one that, again, we were discussing over lunchtime. I used to run, as part of my advisory activities, a little workshop with the owner managers, the owners of a business. And you can run this process with up to about 6 people or with just 2. And I was involved with 2 young men who'd bought a legal practice from a partner in the legal profession who was retiring. And they gave me this example. You know, you go through all of your legal training for 6 years or whatever it is. When you come to start your practice, you're given a manual, a book, some sheets of paper, which just say, this is how you run the business. There's no other training about how to run the cash elements. So we sat down and we did quite a lot of work over about a year. And I was very pleased because they are an extremely successful practice now. So that was an area where you might not think there was a need for any kind of support at all. And my second example, which I can't claim all of the credit for because this would have been a success anyway. Royston is a town up near Cambridge. And there's a company up there who invented back in the late 90s a set-top box, a box to take in sort of Freeview and digital channels for television. And this was quite early in digital TV. And we did some work with their whole management team, looking at what are the issues for the business, what are the things that are stopping you getting to where you want to be. And they wanted to be very successful. And we identified a number of things. Communications within the company, marketing was an issue, and ongoing finance. So we did some work around addressing that. And 5 years later, they sold out to, I'm not sure who they eventually sold out to. It might have been Sky, but they sold out for a fortune and they're both retired and
very happy.
Trying to fill their time just playing golf and walking the dog, probably.
Excellent.
This is one other point, just about the, I think somebody mentioned it earlier on, about diversifying into other businesses. The other example of a business that I wasn't responsible for this at all, but they were also based up near Cambridge, and they were called Geneva Chocolates. And about 10 years ago, are you familiar with Thornton's chocolates? Nice chocolates that are now available quite widely.
Quality shops.
And Geneva Chocolates successfully got the contract to do Thornton's by post mail order. So Thornton started selling a lot of their chocolates by post. And Geneva Chocolates were quite successful because they came up with the concept of working with Thornton's for a size of chocolate box that would fit in a padded envelope and could go straight through a letterbox. So you didn't have to wait for somebody to be in. It was quite successful. However, after a couple of years, Thornton's decided that they didn't want to be paying Geneva Chocolates to be doing that because there was a lot of money to be made. And so they took the contract away. And within a few months, Geneva Chocolates business went from growing down to practically nothing. And they had to reinvent themselves. I don't know how they went, I've got to be honest, I don't know how they got their funding, but they did get their funding because they are now Hotel Chocolat, who are an extremely successful brand in their own right. Far more successful. Yeah. So they saw the writing on the wall, saw that there was going to be a problem, addressed it early, somehow raised the finance and are now far more successful than they would otherwise have been. Yeah. So again, that single-mindedness again, I think, is the message there.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.